John?
This is Wes.
Ryan is not here.
Nope.
It's just us.
Yeah.
The original crew. This is the Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. This is going to be the mini show for the month of December.
Yeah, it's December.
2020.
It is supposed to be the cold month, but it's not.
Well, winter doesn't start for another week or so. I mean, in Orlando, in the state of Florida, it'll get cold for like a couple weeks at the end of January and beginning of February, and then it'll just warm back up.
Yeah, it does immediately. Yeah. It got a little chilly here not that long ago.
Well, yeah, we had a cold front move through, and that's what'll happen. Like,
Every
couple of weeks, there'll be some cold air that moves in, and it'll stay cold for a couple of days, and then because the sun, which our planet revolves, our planet is a sphere.
Yes.
No, it's not flat. It's a disc shape. It's a sphere, and it revolves around the sun. And it's tilted at a 23-degree axis. I can prove it. We have pictures. We went up in the sky, and we took
those
pictures.
Those are fabricated.
But where are we going with this? Winter. It's because it's tilted on a 23-degree axis. There are seasons, but the sun does not heat the air. It actually heats the planet. So if cold air moves through, it chills out for a few days. And then, of course, the cold air...
And just like the elderly, this is where the cold air comes to die.
Yeah.
And then it goes away.
Because the planet is still warm, the air warms up. Weather.
Yeah.
This is not a weather podcast, and I'm sure there's someone who could do a much better explanation than I can.
I appreciate the attempt.
Yeah. But it's to me, it's just interesting that you think of, like, as air being cold, but you don't ever think of, like, the temperature of the actual planet, because you think that the air is part of the planet, which it is, but, like, the ground... is the thing that the sun is warming, not the air.
And we're still discussing this.
Yeah. No, it's just interesting. We can discuss whatever we want. It's the mini show.
That's fair. Hey, where is Ryan, by the way?
He is going to Washington, D.C. to protest at the Supreme Court. He's going to try to stop the Electoral College casting their votes, which is happening today.
Oh. Yeah,
he's trying to steal that their election for Donald Trump. But we probably won't talk about American politics. We're going to talk about video games.
That's good, because I have nothing to contribute to American politics.
Okay, that's totally fine. So before we talk about video games, because the official show at the end of the month is going to be the big 2020 retrospective, we won't do any news then. So I'm going to knock out a few news things now, because they happened. So we'll just address them and then move on.
And listeners can deal with it.
Yeah. So, a couple of months ago, we got an announcement for Scott Pilgrim versus the World, that beat-em-up game,
yes,
coming to Switch. It was announced as coming to Switch holiday. We got a release date for it, an official one, and it's January 14th, which is significantly after holiday.
Yes.
You could argue that it is at least 2 weeks after holiday, but it is what it is. It's, yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. That's totally fine. I'm looking forward to this one, but, you know, waiting an extra 2 weeks, no big deal.
It's hard, too.
Oh, yeah?
I have it on my PS3. Mm. It is hard.
You got, like, a unicorn PS3, then, because that game disappeared. Like,
oh, yeah, it came to fancy.
Yeah, it was, like, on the PlayStation Store, and then it went away, and you haven't been able to get it until, you know, they're re-releasing on the 14th. We also got a release date for Persona 5 Strikers. It was confirmed for a Western release. It's coming out on February 23rd. And, you know, we'll talk about it in January, but February is turning out to be a pretty busy month for the Switch, which is cool. But this is like the action game based on the Persona 5 RPG
series and all that.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm not... I think it's been compared to like a Warriors game, which I think I've had my fill of for a while because I just finished off Hyrule Warriors. We'll get to it.
I can't get into them. I tried so many times. I just can't get into that kind of game.
You know, we might as well address it now because I've been playing Hyrule Warriors. I finished it off. I beat the last boss. And there's a lot of content, side stuff you can do, missions, upgrades, collecting loot.
Desire to do that.
I tinkered with a little bit, and then I unlocked a... a mission where the recommended level was 75 and my highest character is like in the low 60s. I'm like, I'm not going to get up to level 75. So I've passed on the idea that I ever 100% it. But, you know, I'm going to be starting up BioShock over the next day or two.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm not going to be like going back in earnest and grinding out missions in Hyrule Warriors. But I'm not going to be buying another one of these games anytime soon. It definitely reaches a point where even with like all the unique characters you're unlocking, you get to a point of repetition. And I think that it is most exemplified in the second to last mission. No story spoilers if you care about that sort of thing. But minor spoiler for the structure of that mission if you don't want to get spoiled on like the nuts and bolts of it. But the second to last mission, there's a point where, you know, you're like, okay, here's your map. You're going to go around. You're going to kill these enemies, these big boss type enemies. And then you're going to go to this other point and finish it off. You kill all of the boss enemies that you're supposed to throughout the map, and then they all just repopulate, and you got to do it all again.
That's messed up.
Yeah, and there is like this story impetus for why it happens, but I was like looking at the game, I was like, game, you got to be fucking shitting me. Like, that mission lasted 45 minutes. I don't think these Dynasty Warrior-style missions should last 45 minutes.
No, 15 tops.
Yeah, these suits would be quick, like bite-sized missions where, you know, you're able to burn through them and replay them again if you want to try with a different character. But it is a marathon, whereas these missions should be a sprint. So, and because like the missions in general kind of lack variety. Something that I did like about Fire Emblem Warriors, which came out in 2017 on Switch, was that where you were sending your characters mattered. Like if there's a boss you got to beat or a dungeon you got to take over, like a keep, it matters if you send like your archer, because maybe there's Wyvern Knights over there, or you know, there's a guy with an axe, so you want to send a sword wielder over in that direction. In this, it doesn't matter so much, so there's like a layer of kind of strategy that's removed there. So like you're just interacting with the map and like sending different characters to different places, like especially when like the level of the main character, I was using Link throughout most of the game, when it really started to matter what level he was at, because most of the game he was just over leveled. But at the when I was getting to the point where I was getting toward the end of the game, I was like, I'm gonna do everything with Link because I want the most levels with him that I can possibly get. So I just stopped dispersing characters in general. I was like, okay, you go sit over there and make sure no one takes over this keep. And then you go in that way and just kind of fight this boss until I can get over there and finish it off and get the experience from it. So, you know, there's something to be said about the variety of the characters, because there is a pretty deep roster in there. And it's got some surprising characters, ones that you wouldn't think that you'd be playing as. There are also characters that are unlocked by doing side missions rather than through like the main sequence of the game. There's a lot of side stuff happening, and basically the two types of missions are, you know, you're on the ground, you're fighting as Link and everyone else, and you're mowing down enemies, and then there's missions where you're playing as like the divine beasts, and you're just kind of walking through this arena on a big power trip and just blasting, and the objective is usually just kill 3,000 enemies.
Oh god!
And you're done. Yeah, and it's good. And then like, it really gives you this cool sense of scale, because like you're riding this divine beast, and you'll see like this massive horde of Boboclines on the ground, and you'll just like shoot them a few times, and bodies will be flying everywhere, and they're like they're really really tiny, and like, you just got 400 kills. Like, oh my god, I just killed 400. I took 400 lives right then.
Oh my god.
Yeah. So, I mean, overall, I had a positive experience with it, but I was ready for it to end.
Mm-hmm.
I think I spent about 35 hours.
Shit.
I think that's enough. So, like I was saying, like, over the next couple of weeks, I might jump in for a few minutes here and there, because, like, the side stuff are usually pretty short. Because usually, like, time-sensitive missions, like, you got 8 minutes to beat up these amount of enemies or beat this boss. So, that kind of stuff, because... You okay?
I'm good. Sorry. The, okay. Yeah. The things.
Okay. because of, like, you do have, like, this clear endpoint, you know? It's a bit more palatable than, like, hey, jump into this mission. It might last 45 minutes.
Oh, my God.
It should not do that. One last thing that our buddy from the Discord group, Jason, brought up is that when you're playing a mission, if you fail the mission, you don't keep any of the loot or experience from that, and you should. Hmm. And I had a really specific example for that. There is a mission where you're playing as Zelda, and she's like the locked character for that mission. And the objective is beat 1,000 enemies in this time limit. And by the time I was at the end of the mission, enemies were so like dispersed. Like there were a couple of like rando enemies throughout this space that I was supposed to kill them. And just traveling to them so I could take them out was taking too much time. And I failed the mission, having killed 999 of them.
That's fucked up.
And I got nothing for it. It took 10 minutes. And I was like, well, if she had just ran a little bit faster, I could have finished this off.
That's fucked up.
Yep. And I didn't replay that one.
That, yeah. All right.
Anyway. So,
back to news.
That's Hyrule Warriors. Back to news. Sephiroth is coming to Smash.
He is.
How do you feel? Feeling all right? Do you care?
I mean, I don't, because I haven't played Smash in, I mean,
it's right.
been a long time since we had game night, so, I mean, we haven't played Smash in, I don't own it, so.
Have you, like,
and so even then, you don't even have the Game Pass, so we don't even get these characters.
Right, I haven't indulged in any of the DLC characters.
No. So I mean, I don't care personally.
Like, this doesn't make an impact on our lives at all.
At all, not even a little bit. I have mixed feelings about this.
Go on.
Because.
You're allowed to feel things.
I do not feel like Cloud should have been in Smash in the first place. I mean,
okay,
we only get Final Fantasy VII, and that's it. And it's a port. Whoopty freaking do! And now it's on a Nintendo game. Like, all right.
Yeah, we got a port of a 21-year-old PS1 game, but the PC version of this 21-year-old PS1 game. But that
justifies him coming to Smash.
I mean,
which is gibberish.
You know, at this point, like, and I am speaking to this as an outsider. I do not indulge in Smash Brothers all that much. I own the game. I have played the game. I am not like hardcore into Smash Brothers, so that's the perspective I'm approaching this with. There are a lot of specifically podcast hosts. That's where I'm kind of getting this sort of attitude from, talking about like how Smash Brothers should be this celebration of video games. They should have like Kratos in Smash.
No,
and
no.
I really disagree with that. Like, I think that having this attitude, like just throw everything in Smash, I think dilutes how special it is that you have all these characters in one place fighting.
I agree with the idea of having it being a celebration of video games, but it should be a celebration of Nintendo video games.
Yeah.
It should just stay within that theme. Throw everything Nintendo into it.
Yeah.
Stuff the thing to the gills with Nintendo, but don't just start throwing random, like Steve from Minecraft. I mean, we just get the Minecraft on Switch. That's it.
Uh-huh.
And he's Sully in Smash. Like, it's just,
it's become like a popularity contest. Are you popular enough to be in Smash Brothers? And I really hope that at some point, you know, whenever, if there is another Smash Brothers game, or if they just keep on porting Ultimate from system to system, if they do a new Smash Brothers game, have some serious roster contraction. Because it's bloated. It's bloated, and there's like this sense of entitlement to like having the specific character that you want in the game. Otherwise, you're really, really mad.
Banjo-Kazooie, fantastic addition.
Mm. And you see, like, and that's
stuff
sort of like
that. Go for it.
It's used to be a Nintendo franchise. It's Nintendo adjacent, but like most remembered for being on N64.
So yeah, that deserves to be there.
Bayonetta counts because that, you know, much, it's a platinum developed game. Nintendo publishes it now, and it is a Nintendo exclusive franchise now.
Yes.
So
that one's fine. Go for it.
Do we need Solid Snake anymore? I don't think we do.
No. Oh, I forgot about Solid Snake. Yeah, what was he doing there in the first place?
He was in Brawl. He was just like a surprise guest character. Like, hey, cool. Because like, in Brawl was the first time that they started bringing in third-party characters. Because in Brawl, you got like Sonic and Solid Snake. And
those, but do we have any of those games where Snake on Nintendo games?
There was... Well, the Metal Gear series started on, I think, MSX and NES. So like,
oh, okay.
Old games. But yeah, ever since like PS1, they've been pretty much guaranteed to come out on Sony systems. And I think since the NES, the only installment was on the GameCube, where it got a remake of the PS1 Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah.
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 Which is now close to a 20-year-old game.
Yeah. I don't know. It's another dude with a sword.
Sure, but this is a really long sword.
This is a very long sword, so he's going to have a crazy reach.
I don't know. They're doing some sort of presentation on the 17th to go in further in depth with this character. Like, I'm sure there'll be something like with Materia, maybe a summon or something. They'll have something like crazy going on with it. Yeah. I don't have any strong feelings one way or the other. Past.
Oh God! There should be
fewer characters in Smash. There should be less.
I see this coming now. Now we're gonna get Yuna from Final Fantasy X.
Oh my God!
But she's gonna work like the Pokemon trainer with different summons.
Well, that'd be funny. Well, that's a great idea.
It'd be Ifrit, Shiva, and probably Odin.
Yeah, maybe Odin. Wait, was Odin in that game?
In 10?
Yeah.
No. So never mind on that. So it'd be Ifrit, Shiva. It could be Veilfor. Veilfor doesn't have any like arms or anything, so I mean, it'd just be
okay.
Be awkward.
Well, yeah, I suppose.
I'm
trying to think of another Smash character that doesn't have arms. I'm sure there's one.
I'm sure there is. So I mean,
but do we need?
It's not very, very valid.
Do we need Wii Fit Trainer anymore?
No,
we really don't.
No, we really, really don't.
I think you're right. I think Ifrit, Shiva, and then maybe Bahamut.
Bahamut would work. I don't think they should do this. Keep in mind, listeners, I'm not contradicting myself. They should not do this. I'm saying about how ridiculous it would be if they did shit like this.
It's funny how it's all worked out, though, because Smash Brothers used to be a way of... kind of like a minor aspect of the game was promoting lesser-known stuff. Because like this is how like Fire Emblem gets introduced to North America with Rory Marth and Ness... kind of brings Earthbound into a bigger public consciousness. But now it's just kind of used as, it's popular, put it in Smash, rather than it's unpopular, put it in Smash and see if we can push some sales. I don't know.
Like them putting Sora.
Oh my God.
God, we're going to bring this up again. I can't, like, what, Chain of Memories? Is that like the only thing?
358 over 2 days, dream drop.
Sora's
distance.
Not in that game.
Oh no,
Sora's not in
358. I don't know anything about this Kingdom Hearts series.
He's not even in that fucking game.
No, I don't.
See, shit like that doesn't justify Smash. All right,
I don't give a shit at all about Kingdom Hearts. So
yeah, moving on from Smash.
Yeah. So overall, we're giving a big shrug to Sephiroth and Smash. Who
like
cares?
What they do, like yeah.
Not against it. Not particularly for it either. We did get some game announcements coming out of the Game Awards, mostly. A couple of ones from Capcom. Nice that Capcom's shown up. There's going to be a Ghosts and Goblins game. It's called Ghosts and Goblins Resurrection. It is a new-ish game. It's kind of a mashup between a couple of other Ghosts and Goblins games, returning elements from both of them. That one's coming out on the 25th. Ghosts and Goblins is a series that I have tinkered with. I don't particularly like the visual style for this one. It kind of looks like it's compared to like a storybook or like an illuminated manuscript sort of style. I think the animations look stiff, but I don't know. It's we're still a ways from release, so I'm trying not to pass too many judgments on it before
it comes out.
It
looks clunky.
It may look a little clunky, dare I say.
Maybe a little clunky.
Yeah. Capcom also announced Capcom Arcade Stadium. That one's coming out in February. No specific day for that one. But it's kind of this, like, virtual console service for Capcom arcade games, except instead of buying, like, each game individually, they release them as packs. And most of the games that they showed in the trailer I did not recognize because, you know, a lot of these arcade games came out in, like, the 80s and early 90s before I was, you know, old enough to venture into arcades.
Yeah,
but I don't know. It's a cool idea to have this sort of stuff available. I'm glad they're doing it. And then Saga Frontier Remastered is coming to Switch in 2021. It's a remaster of a PS1 game. I don't know. Looks kind of cool. There's a ton of other RPGs that are coming out in 2021, so I doubt this one will be on the radar. And last up for the news, the Switch got an update.
Oh.
It updated to 11.0.0. And
that's what that is. I've seen that. I haven't had a chance to do it yet.
The biggest thing that I can think of that they added was there's a little widget now for the online NES, not NES online, Nintendo Switch online, where you can click on it and it'll show you stuff that's available through their online service, like a subscription and the NES online stuff and Super Nintendo online games and Mario 35 and Tetris 99 kind of give you the commercials for all that. But it does show some stats, your friends spent this much time playing NES games, and your friend's birthday is this day, and this game came out on that day. So, I don't
weird.
Know. Yeah.
Yeah, that's weird.
It's kind of like this neat little thing. Click on it, kind of browse through for a couple seconds, and then move on with your life. It is interesting, though, that this is the thing that they add instead of, themes or something. You still got, you can do any theme you want as long as you want black or white. No, it's strange to me that they never.
Yeah, I got a Shovel Knight. Actually, no, let's get this specific. What was it? Door of Shadows? No, what's the shadow? What the Spectre Knight one? What was that called?
Oh, I don't remember.
Yeah, whatever the Spectre Knight.
I'm trying to think of it. Spectre of Shadow?
Spectre of Shadow. Torment. Yeah. I have that theme on my PS4.
Shadowy Torment.
Yeah.
Torment of Spectre?
Something like that.
I don't know.
It plays the music while you're at the base.
Uh-huh.
And you hear the deet, deet, deet sound and you move through the thing. I love my PS4 because of that.
I should. I have a PS4 now. I'm not going to spend too much time talking about it because I've only used it for one thing so far, and that's HBO Max. Because there's
you can get HBO Max on that?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, shit.
It doesn't run great, but HBO Max in general doesn't run great right now. Hopefully they're able to clean that up, and they should, because they got all those Warner Brothers movies coming out with it.
Oh,
you didn't hear about that?
No, not the Warner Brothers movies.
Warner Brothers, Wonder Woman and Matrix 4, their new Dune movie, pretty much their entire...
Matrix 4?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah, I don't know. Whatever.
What's Keanu doing in that movie?
What's he doing in life? But yeah, all of these... there's 7 or 8 big Warner Brothers movies that are releasing in 2021 that they are releasing on HBO Max at the same time as in theaters.
Hmm.
So, hopefully they'll get their online stuff up to snuff before that all comes out.
There's a lot of good stuff on HBO Max. Mm-hmm. What are you watching on?
Harley Quinn.
How is that? Let's take a tangent and talk about Harley Quinn.
It's actually in my notes to talk about.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh!
It's fun. It's, animated series, 20-minute episodes. They move really quickly.
I pretty much got it for 2 months, HBO Max. And at the end of the 2 months, I'm like, I really need to cancel this. I'm not watching this that much. And it was when I got done with Harley Quinn. I'm like, there's other stuff on here I want to watch, but I'm not getting around to it, so I'm going to cancel it because I'm done with Harley Quinn right now. Because I burned through the 2 seasons of it, and they need to do more because it is a joy.
I'm pretty sure they are doing another season. At least another season. Okay, yeah, it's really fun. I just watched the one. I'm in the middle of season 2, and I like the way that season 2 is structured because kind of like the overarching narrative of season 1 is Harley Quinn taking out the Joker, and then the beginning of season 2, it's okay, now there's these other crime bosses that have kind of divided up Gotham. Now she's going to go take out every one of them. So, it allows them to have a lot more fun with these shorter form things rather than trying to build up.
Mm-hmm.
To the one showdown. But the show doesn't take itself seriously
at all.
It's really silly. It's got a fun cast of characters. Like, she's got her little goon squad of it's Clayface, the shark guy.
Yep, killer. I think it's King Shark.
King Shark. Yeah, King Shark. That's gotta be it.
King Shark.
Doctor. No, the psychic guy.
Yeah, Psycho.
Might just be Psycho.
Is it Dr. Psycho?
Maybe he's a doctor, I don't know.
Yeah, right.
And then, Poison Ivy, because they're BFFs, Poison Ivy, joins them on capers every once in a while. But she's a funny character, because basically she's, the straight man in the comedy troupe. She's like the one who doesn't really tell a lot of jokes.
Yeah, like she seems like the normal one.
Right. And she doesn't identify as a criminal. She's an eco-terrorist. But yeah, because she's got like the moral compass, or the one that is always like telling Harley, like, no, that's not the right thing to do. You got to do this other thing. And then, of course, Harley ignores it all and goes and, you know, does her own thing every time. And that's kind of the arc of every episode. It's like, oh, I should have listened to you from the start. Like, yeah. Yeah, you should have.
Bane is a joy.
Bane is a hoot. Because he's got, like, the Dark Knight Rises voice. Yes. So it's super silly. Commissioner, I like Commissioner Gordon, because he's just this washed-up deadbeat.
They have better arc with him in season two.
Yeah.
Like, he's very entertaining in season two.
Mm-hmm. And Barbara Gordon shows up in season two as well, yep. And she's been pretty fun. But yeah, like they always like have these capers and everyone's just a giant fuck up, which just lends to some really like funny situations. And it's also very self aware. There's a bit of fourth wall breaking. The voice of King Shark is Ron Funches, stand up comedian.
I don't recognize him.
He's got some good stand up comedy specials.
Huh.
Yeah, he's funny. But yeah, thumbs up.
Yeah, I'm liking it. Definitely worth it. It's like, mm-hmm. like Harley Quinn to HBO Max is pretty much what The Mandalorian is to Disney Plus.
Okay.
Okay. In my opinion, that's you get it, watch it, get rid of it.
Well, I'm also watching through Doctor Who again. So
that's
all on
that's
there.
Good. And then I mean the one Golden Compass shows on there. What is that called? I forget what it's called. That's on there.
I want to watch
Lovecraft thing is on there.
I want to watch Lovecraft Country. That looks pretty good. There's a couple, like, a good, like, 9-10 things on my watch
list. Historic Materials. Man, oh, yeah. I was blanking on that. Wow, that's based on the Golden Compass mm-hmm. book, which I know nothing on.
Neither do I. Just know that they made a movie with a polar bear in it.
Yeah. This is, like, a little bit more of a different take on it, and a little bit more, it seems more serious. So yeah, I don't know nothing about that, but that's on there, and Lovecraft's on there. Man, we're gonna have to get some money from HBO here soon.
Yeah, we're doing a big commercial.
Amazon.
I think we did start this conversation with, like, this is a bad streaming service.
And we haven't even discussed, was it Tushy's? We haven't even brought them up
yet. Oh, Hello Tushy? It's called Hello Tushy.
Oh, Hello Tushy. Yeah, oh.
Yeah, I figured it out. But very fine bidets to use while you watch HBO Max.
Bidets, sir. On the toilet.
But like, overall, like, I'm pleased with the content. I'm excited to get through all this stuff. But as a streaming service in general, it's not great, because, like, it works on my phone. It works on the PS4 most of the time. For whatever reason, like, I tried to watch something on my computer last night. Wasn't loading. Hmm. But then, like, I just watched something on Netflix instead. And that worked just fine. I turned on something on Amazon Prime just to see if that was working as well. Watched through there's a show on there called Electric Dreams. It's based on the short stories written by a guy whose name is escaping, but the guy who wrote Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep.
That's not Isaac Asimov?
No.
It's not that old.
It's more of a... It's more
I know,
like a,
I know what you're talking about.
Common white guy name.
Scott. it's Fredrickson. I don't...
Scott Jones.
Scott Jones.
No, but he wrote Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, which is the novel that Blade Runner is an adaptation of.
Okay.
So I watched an episode of that Amazon Prime show to see if that was working, why HBO Max was not. And it wasn't great, but there's like, it's a little like Black Mirror, where it's kind of like this... Oh, Black Mirror was fine. I never finished, like, the newest season of Black Mirror, but Black Mirror had some really, like, trippy episodes, which was cool. But I don't know. It was just one episode. I'll probably watch a couple more to see if it improves. But I think that's how it's supposed to be structured. It's like each episode is like its own individual, like, 45-minute short movie.
Hmm.
But, yeah, Amazon Prime. We'll give them a commercial, too. Everybody. Everyone give us
everybody money. Give me.
Where were we? Video games. Oh, what do you got on tap? You got anything?
So, right now life is being absorbed by something called World of Warcraft. I don't know if you've heard of this. Wonderful.
I have.
I don't. Yeah, it's the new expansion came out and is
it's an RTS, right? Warcraft, real time strategy.
Pretty much. No, it's God damn, I can't think of anything clever. I ruined it.
It's a dating sim.
I ruined the joke. It's a dating sim.
It's a match three puzzle game.
It's the daddy. It's the daddy dating sim.
World of Warcraft is based on the
storyline
of Warcraft, though.
Yeah, pretty much.
Just
the new expansion Shadowlands came out, and it's very enjoyable. I'm having a really good time with it, but it is demanding a ton of hours because right now we're week three in? Week two? It's been like 3 weeks. We're in like week three right now, and I am massively behind already. It's very, very demanding. The game has daily quests, it has campaign quests. There's this new mechanic, new thing called Torghast. It's a tower climb thing. And every week, different wings are slowly opening up. And it's essentially just you're climbing through different floors of this tower. And you're finding essentially power-ups that will last you through the tower to make you stronger to get through. And it'll boost certain abilities and stuff for while you're in that tower during that run. And that is, they take so long. It takes so goddamn long to just go through one run of it, like 40 minutes or so, really, if you don't, like, rush it. And so you gotta make your Torghast runs, you gotta do your daily quest runs. I had to run through my Mythic Dungeons to gear up, because I got a raid that finally came out this past week. And so tomorrow, raid's starting over again, so I got a raid, there's just so much crap going on with this game, it's absurd.
Now, was this, you were talking about like them doing like a level contraction?
They already did that, so the max level right now is level 60. It works fine. I mean, it's just everything's scaled accordingly and everything was adjusted to for that type of thing. So now instead of the max level cap being 130, it's only 60. But like I'm sitting here wanting to level up my other dudes. I want to get my Death Knight leveled up and everything like that, but I'm like, do I really have the time to do this? Because I need to do all this other things I'm massively behind in. So it's a very good expansion. The dungeons are very fun. Even Torghast, which is just irritating to me, is well done. The raid is fantastic so far. It's just too much stuff right now. It's difficult to really keep going with it unless you're really pouring hours into this game. Mitch has done 25 plus runs through dungeons this week.
The same dungeon?
No, there's different dungeons. There's about eight of them. But he's done...
So like done like three apiece.
Yeah, essentially. Okay. So he mixes up. Because the way the game goes is the max level for dungeons is mythic, and then you get keys that will up the difficulty. Okay. And so... by beating the timer in the mythic dungeons, you get a upgraded key for a different dungeon. So you push your keys. That's the thing. And he's been doing that. And he's only 5 eye levels above me. Like, he's really not that much higher than I am. And I have run not even half of what he's done. So the game is being pretty stingy on drops right now. But so there's so much going on with the game.
When you say you're falling behind, like what's the harm in being behind? Like, why can't you just move at your own pace?
You can, but the reason why I'm having issues falling behind is I want to keep up with the guild that I'm involved in because we're pushing raid. So we're trying to get done with the raid and everything. So I want to stay geared and leveled in order to keep up with the raid.
Yeah, you don't want to let the team down.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to fall behind the damage charts and be useless and everything like that. And the way they have this now is like there's now legendary things, which you have to craft a legendary piece of thing and you get it. You're able to do this with the resources you get from the tower, and it's a big clusterfuck of just chaos. It really is. But it's only a couple weeks in, and hopefully it'll balance out eventually here soon. I just don't have time to pour into this game. You really have to commit if you want to keep up on everything. It's rough. It's pretty brutal, but it is fantastic. It looks really nice. It's definitely the best looking expansion. It's made by the same people who did Legion, which was two expansions ago, and everybody really liked Legion. And it definitely shows. There's a lot of elements from Legion that are bleeding into this. Yeah, it's great. If you guys haven't played World of Warcraft a long time or never have, I mean, now's the time to really get into it. It doesn't take long to get from level 1 to level 60, and it's... Yeah, now's a good time to get back into that game.
I was walking through a... it was a Target. I don't know, we went to so many different stores today. But I was walking through a Target, and they had like a 50% off bin.
For video games?
Yeah, with...
Why didn't you come to my Target? I was there today.
Well, your Target is in the other direction than we were going.
I'm deeply offended, though.
Okay.
I've been expecting you to make this special trip just to see me.
We were walking through this Target, and there was a 50% off, and like there was one Switch game, and it was Wonderful 101, and I was looking at it, I was like, 50% off, but there wasn't like an actual price tag on it, so I was like, I don't need to buy this game again. I didn't like it that much on Wii U. But I was looking at the PS4 games, because I own one of those now, and I saw Final Fantasy 14, and I was like, oh, do I want to play Final 14? Fantasy? Yeah.
Isn't that the...
It's an MMO.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's online, yeah.
It's like, do I want to play Final Fantasy 14? Like, no, I don't.
No, you don't.
I absolutely do not.
MMOs absorb your life. It's insane.
I don't have time for that. I play like 4 games at a time. I can't... I need to pare that down while I'm thinking about it. But, yeah, having an MMO like that... Like, I'm worried what's going to happen when, like, Monster Hunter comes out. Because I'm not going to want Monster Hunter to be my exclusive game. But it might have to be. If I want to keep up with some other people that are playing it. No, I can't. I can't indulge
you in that. You don't really need to. Like, Monster Hunter, I dove pretty good into that game. But I didn't get to the point where I was finding the big stuff. Because there is a certain point where you're just kind of done with story and you're just going.
Yeah.
Which I haven't even finished up the story. I was still finding new stuff and doing things. And there were still other monsters I hadn't fought by the time I quit. But I got a good chunk out of that game. I got my mind's worth out of it, and I wasn't even done with the story.
That's so good.
That kind of game, even if someone's like way geared higher than you, you can still run raids with them and stuff like that. It still is.
I think, and in general, it seems to be like a pretty friendly community where, you know, if you're at a lower level, they'll be like, yeah, we don't mind like playing down to your level or helping you out with these harder things.
Yeah,
like in general, it doesn't seem to be very like hostile if you're not like up to snuff. But yeah, looking forward to that one, but that's not till March. We're still a ways away from that. I finished another game. I finished Return of the Obra Dinn, which is that...
Oh, that's that ship thing with the weird black and white and...
Yeah.
That did not look entertaining.
That's a game, speaking of games that you have to dedicate like your full attention to. While I was playing that, I was playing like 3 other games, and that's not the right way to play that game.
No.
You really have to... invest in it, and you really have to be okay with like retreading territory, rewatching things, flipping through like your logbook, and like really focusing in on like subtle narrative elements. You have to be super observant, and they don't do a whole lot of things that make it super friendly to like retrace your steps. Like sometimes like before every like memory that you witness, there's a black screen and there's an audio clip and you get like the text for the audio. And in order to identify people, like there are a lot of times you have to pay attention to the things they're saying to each other. If they're speaking with an accent, if they're speaking a different language, Google Translate helps as well, because they'll give you the translation, but they won't tell you what language they were speaking. So, you know, knowing what language, like if they're speaking a language other than English, knowing what that is will help you identify people. But basically, like, it is a cleverly designed game, because when I originally talked about it, I talked about how, like, I was figuring that once I got to a certain point, like, the dominoes would fall and things would kind of go into place and it would get easier. It doesn't. They maintain like this good balance of difficulty throughout. Like even when like you're in the home stretch, you only have like 10 people left to identify. You still really have to do like your detective work and figure out, you know, who's who in order to finish it all out. So I did end up finishing it. but I only did like maybe 60% of my own. And then at that point, I was like, okay, I'm playing three other things. I need to finish this game off. So I just looked up solutions. And then like once you get to like a certain number of people identified, you're able to like initiate the final scene. And then from there, there's only like three people left to identify. So I just did those on my own because that was pretty easy. But yeah, this is it's a game that is really interesting, but you really have to be invested in it. You have to devote like your attention to it because it seems like it's a game that, you know, when you know all the solutions, you could beat it in probably a half hour or less. But
like Myst, it only takes 5 minutes.
Right. What exactly? Like once you know the answers, you're just good to go. This is a game where, you know, it's a really simple premise, simple mechanics. It can probably take like upwards of 16, maybe 20 hours to actually get through it all if you're doing it all honestly. You have to really, really like detective work. And it's not so much like puzzles, like a Picross grid where, you know, you're just using process of elimination. You have to like infer things. You have to take guesses. And, you know, they're the only way to know if your guesses are correct or incorrect is, I don't think I ever covered this. You have to identify the person, how they died, and who killed them, if anyone. If they died by like by drowning, there's not necessarily a murderer there. But once you have deduced three people, name, how they died, and who killed them, it will tell you like, hey, you got these three people correct. But it will only tell you when you get three people correct, when you've gotten them. So, you know, if you've guessed on four people and, you know, you got and it doesn't tell you got some correct until after you've done that fourth person, you know, okay, that third, like one of those people that I did there, the one that they didn't tell me was right, something's wrong there, I need to change some things around. So, you know, guesswork can help you out, but you got to be careful because sometimes guessing too much will give you like less information to work with, so you're drawing conclusions based on a wrong assumption. Anyway, I digress. It is a really neat idea for a game. I did not have the full attention given to it that it needed. Also, real quick, I am playing through Fire Emblem, Shadow Dragon, and the Blade of Light, which is the first Fire Emblem game that came out on Famicom, regular Nintendo in Japan. Never was released in North America till now. They did do some nice improvements on it. There is a turn rewind. You can rewind several turns, and there's no like cap to it like there is in Three Houses. You can just like go back to whatever turn you wanted. And there's also a bookmark feature. You can set a save state and then load the save state.
That's pretty cool.
These are handy, because there are a number of things that this Fire Emblem does not do that they eventually do in further games.
This is the first one. So
right.
Yeah.
So it's understandable. Like these are like the...
No, it's not. It's unacceptable.
How dare they not make a perfect game on their first attempt?
And with a system that's not nearly as capable as the others.
Yep. So this is like looking at the cave paintings before they really got to the fine-tuned stuff later on. Specifically, you cannot see your range of movement, nor can you see your enemy's range of movement.
So it's kind of guesswork.
Yep. So there's a lot of guesswork, which is, you know, where bookmarks and turn rewinds come in handy. You also don't have the information that you do in other Fire Emblem games, where before you initiate a fight, you can see your hit percentage, your crit percentage, and the damage that you would do, and those pieces of information for the enemy as well. So there are times where you can do things like check your own stats before you go into a fight. You cannot change your equipment in the same turn that you're doing an attack. So you gotta make sure that you're attacking with the right thing. But there are times where, you know, you'll look at your character, look at their character, go and initiate a fight, and you won't realize that you have a low hit percentage. For whatever, either your skill is too low or they're on some sort of terrain that gives them the higher avoidance. there's no weapon triangle either, so that doesn't that's something that you don't have to take into account. Whereas, you know, I have an axe, he's got a sword, so I have a lower hit percentage, that doesn't matter. They're the only thing that does matter natively to the characters is ranged units. Characters with bows are better against flying enemies. So there is that. Also, you do have your weapons, like Rider's Bane, Armor Slayer, those things are in the game as well. Your equipment really does matter, even more so than your stats in some cases, especially early on. Equipment is still breakable, so you have to do have to keep in mind how often you're using things. There are a lot of shops throughout each map, because there's no like interstitial section where you like go to your base and you're able to re-equip and stash weapons and things like that. Everything is done on the map. So there are quite a few turns, especially toward the end, where all I have to do is like capture the throne and move on, where I'm spending some time doing shopping and re-equipping everyone for the next mission. Because you can only carry 4 items, and there is the weapon durability, but by like halfway through the game, you know, iron weapons and basic weapons weren't just cutting it anymore, so I had to like upgrade with everyone. And there's still like the thing where steel weapons are heavier, like more powerful but heavier, and at that point, like, my character's speed wasn't enough to where I was like attacking twice with steel weapons, so I just had to upgrade everyone to silver. And thankfully, like, thanks to bookmarks, arenas are pretty plentiful throughout the game, so you can do things like grind out kind of character levels if you need to, or just like grind out for cash. Like, I have enough cash to equip everyone like 10 times over, so money has not been an issue because of those the frequency of those arenas. But like, those iron weapons just aren't doing the trick, so you have to upgrade your weapons. You have to keep those things in mind. There are a ton of playable characters. This is a huge roster. I don't know if it works this way in the Famicom version. In the DS remake of this game, if you start like running low on characters because they're all dying, like if you're playing really badly, they would give you rando, like, here's just a mage. Here's a mage that joined your team. He's here.
Here's Scott Fredrickson.
Yeah, he's seen everyone dying on your squad. He figured he'd join up and die too.
He might as well. Yep. I mean, it just seemed like the cool thing to do.
Mm-hmm. And it is, of course, like there's no, like, outside of those arenas, there's no real way to like improve characters other than engaging in actual battle. So, you know, you have to kind of pick who you want to use and roll with them. There are a couple of opportunities where you have to, like, you'll change out, but you also have to be ready to abandon people if they're not working out. Like, I had a couple of archers early in the game. Gordon, which is another cool generic white name, and I don't know, Fritz or something. It wasn't Fritz, but he was a hunter character. It's a different class. Then he turns into like a horsed archer, which is something that I wanted an archer on horseback.
Wrath.
Yeah, because Wrath is real great.
Yeah,
because characters upgrade in very specific ways. You need the item to do it. Sometimes you harvest those items off of enemies. Sometimes they're given to you for visiting towns. But like a cavalier will upgrade to a paladin. A Pegasus knight will evolve or upgrade into a wyvern knight. So far, Marth, my main lord character, has not changed class. I'm in mission 20, so hopefully that happens soon. And thieves don't change class,
which annoys me.
Yeah, because I love assassins, and like the thief character, like, he's still really useful for like utility stuff, so it's worth having. You get a couple of thieves close to the beginning of the game. It's worth having one of them around to open chests and like hold your keys to open doors and lower drawbridges and things like that. And then he's also pretty handy in a fight. He does not get a very high weapon level. So, you know, like other Fire Emblem games, your weapon level will determine what sort of equipment you can use. Except instead of having like your weapon level up the more you use that weapon, it is part of your level ups. So in part of your random stat growth, you might get, you know, a higher weapon level to let you use better weapons. He did not get very high weapon levels. He can only use iron and steel weapons.
That's annoying.
He's fast enough to make that okay. He might be able to use killer swords. I should check that out. Because that would be pretty useful for him, because he got a pretty good luck stat. But he's still a usable character. He's a thief at level 20, so he's got some maxed out stats. It seems like most stats are maxing out at 20. So I haven't had a character that has a higher stat than that yet. And they've leveled up several times since they hit that benchmark. So I'm not sure if that's a hard cap or if that's just really a poor coincidence on behalf of my team. But yeah, I'm having a good time with it. It's a really interesting piece of history. There's a speed up function. You can turn off battle animations, but it doesn't turn off the battle screen in general. You can speed up enemies' turn double time. You can speed up your turn double time, or you can do both. There's different settings for each. And it's not terribly long. It's like 25 missions, no side missions. Oh, I did also want to mention when I was talking about buying equipment and swapping out equipment. You can only access your convoy in mission at a very like specific tent. Sometimes there are multiple like convoy tents throughout the map, but it's like Resident Evil rules. If you store something in one convoy, it's also in the other. And there is a cap on that of 40 items. So there have been times where I've been going in there and like you can only discard things if they're in like possession of a character, not in a convoy. So there have been times where I like go in there and I spend several turns with a character taking some out of a convoy. Don't want that anymore. Discard it. Like, here's low level magic. Don't want that anymore. Discard it. And it takes like, you can only like perform one of these actions in a turn. So like 50 turns later, like working through my convoy, maybe doing some arena battling with something else, just kind of managing inventory, which is something that thankfully is much improved later in the series. But yeah, I think it's an interesting piece of history. It's only $6. I think that if you're into Fire Emblem, it's a cool thing to be able to own. And the gameplay is good enough to where it's worth playing through.
Yeah, I picked it up. I don't know when I'll be able to get to it. I'm kind of drowning in games now. Mm. And, you know, of course, World of Warcraft.
Yep, it's that time of year.
God in heaven.
Wait, what's another game that you got?
So tag in. I could touch briefly on this because I'm only 2 hours, maybe three, if that, into it. But I picked up Cyberpunk 2077.
Okay.
And yeah, the first thing you said was ask me about how buggy it is.
Isn't the game broken?
I haven't seen anything crazy. The weirdest thing I seen was I was walking down the street and like three dudes to my left just vanished.
Cool.
That was the only thing I've seen.
Oh, that's a feature.
Yeah. Which, I mean, it's you gotta find them. There's so much stuff going on that I can accept that. I mean, this is just, I don't know how this can handle it. Like, there's so much shit going on in this game.
Are you playing on a PS4 or Pro?
PS4. Just regular PS4. Which I hear is, people are like, that's not a great idea. I'm like, well, it's the only way I got.
And that's why I don't like mid-console upgrades. Is because by the time you get to the end, like, you're almost forced to buy.
Yeah.
The next one.
Do it like they did with the N64. Make me buy a little cartridge to upgrade it. I mean, come on. Let's.
Oh, I don't know how ready I am to accept a world of modular consoles either. Like, I don't like that about the N64. I don't want like to have to buy like special Joy-Con to click into my Switch so I can play better games because they have an extra processor in the controller.
I mean, they did with the Wii, the Wii Controller Plus, whatever.
Oh, yeah. To an extent. The Wii U needed to be a modular console. You had to have a hard drive for that thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, Cyberpunk.
Which, my answer to that, to everybody saying it's broken and everything like that, one of my favorite games of all time, definitely top five of all time games for me, is Skyrim. And that was a buggy-ass game. And I still thoroughly enjoyed it. I mean, the weirdest bug I've ever seen was this little lady I was talking to. And then for some reason, I can't remember what, she just started floating up into the sky and just drifted off into nothing.
How delightful.
Yeah, it was great. I'll miss her.
And her husband had to go looking for her. He attached a bunch of balloons to his house. And.
But other than that, like 3 hours in, I haven't seen too many bugs. It's...
Except for random people disappearing.
Just other than random people that don't matter just vanishing randomly. And I think it was just between like low points. So it was just loading from one area to another and just kind of those people just got lost in the translation.
I don't know, like should they have delayed it even more? Like should a game be released in this state?
I am fine with the game being buggy if it's still really good. Like, if it's still good.
You'll put up with a certain playable, jank.
I will put up with the jank. Sometimes the jank is part... 5 years down the line, I'm going to be reflecting on this game, and I'm going to be talking about how messed up it was, but it was a fun quirk of the game, like Skyrim being buggy as fuck. Like, it's... Obviously, that's not what they wanted.
I don't think it's their intention to make like an Octodad style. This is funny because it sucks.
It's not their intention, but it's a part of it that we're now embracing. I think I'm looking forward to really getting into this game and diving into it, because there's a lot that goes on with it just from quick glance. Like, I'm done with it. I'm very excited to find out what kind of like your character has a bunch of cybernetic augmentations to it, and there's a big list in your character sheet of upgrade slots, and I just got the first upgrade, which is essentially the story thing to tell you what they are and how they work. And like, she upgraded, I picked a girl character, which I feel dirty about doing, and I'll explain why in a moment. But they upgrade her eyes, and she got a new hand and everything. Like, oh, okay, this is pretty cool, and there's certain benefits to it. So this is going to be cool to get upgrades for my character while still, like, putting stats in with the levels and then crafting different kinds of weapons and making this how I want it to be. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how in-depth this game gets with that type of thing, because I went into it with basically no understanding of it. I hadn't seen any gameplay of it. I just had a general idea about it, and I thought, might as well just try this out. Reason why I feel dirty, and I don't know why I went ahead with it. But some games I do play, I just pick a female character, because I'm going through the game. I'm just going to listen to this nice female voice and everything like that. It's enjoyable. Why not?
Sometimes you don't want to see a sweaty man running around.
Exactly. It's nice with the lady and stuff like that. The character creation screen is why I feel really dirty. This game is rated M. It's rated M for a reason.
Okay.
And I feel bad selling this to this little lady for her grandson, who's in high school.
Okay.
Because she asked, like, is this game appropriate? I was like, because this is before I even bought it. I was like, well, it's probably like Call of Duty. It's just going to be gory and have some language and everything. I didn't read the back of the game.
Hmm.
But there is strong nudity in this game.
Is this game appropriate is such a loaded question. Like...
They just throw this at you, this nudity.
In the character creation screen.
In the character creation screen.
Okay.
You're close up on the head, and you're picking out the different facial things, and then you scroll down the line, and it starts getting to things like body, and it zooms out to get the full body, and boom, just naked.
Okay.
There's a chick with tits right there. Boom, right in your face. And then it gets to the point where this is absolutely absurd, and I do not think this needs to be in a video game ever. But you get to select their genitals.
Okay.
The male...
That's got to be a crucial gameplay component.
Exactly. You can either have them just plain turned off, where they're just wearing shorts. You can even turn off the nipples if you want.
Okay.
Which I think is creepier than having nipples. But the men have about 4 or 5... I don't know. I didn't get far into the men character creation. Different types of penises.
Uh-huh.
And different sizes. See,
seems kind of low, but sure.
And there was a lot of memes going online about it. It was like, this is the default penis. This is like so big. I don't understand.
I feel inadequate.
This isn't good. There's like a small penis, a circumcised penis. This is absurd. And then it gets to the women, and there's 3 different breast sizes.
Oh, okay.
And then if you could throw a penis on her. They're very understanding about this.
Okay.
Or you can just give her a vagina.
Just the one type?
Just the one type, but you do get to pick. But you do get to pick the different kind of pubic hair they have.
Okay. Well, wonderful.
One to being a lightning bolt.
Okay. Sure.
This is the most absurd thing I've ever seen. And the very first mission after you get through your basic backstory area. You're trying to find this girl who essentially was kidnapped, and you find her in a bathtub just with this other dude full of ice, people trying to harvest her organs and stuff like that, and she's just there naked, and you just carry out into the terrace. And as you're carrying out into the terrace, based on the way that the screen is, because it is first person, you just see a one boob right there, right at the bottom of your sight.
Okay.
just moving up and down as you're walking into the
terrace. Totally appropriate.
This,
yep.
Just this boob. Most ridiculous thing.
You know, as far as like the character creation stuff, like there's no denying that there is going to be like a pervy or voyeuristic element to that, but you know there also has, like, you can say something about like having a sort of representation, like you can make someone in the game who looks more like you, and some people appreciate that sort of representation. I think that
except you with the bigger penis now,
right? I think you need to have like as many, like, if you're going to go down this route, you need to have a lot of options. And the options you were telling me for about all of those elements you're telling me about seems low. I think they should have gone further.
I mean, there's only like 4 pubic hairstyles.
Come on. Come on.
One of them is a heart.
You know, that seems like such low effort. Get it together, guys.
Let's go crazy with this. Like, why cybernetic penis? I mean, all of them were just normal floppy penises.
Yeah, why don't you have a robot dick?
Yeah, exactly. Why can't I have that?
That's a good idea. When we make a game, everyone's going to have
a robot dick. Everybody's got a robot dick. Everybody.
The animals, the food, everything.
Just robot dicks everywhere.
Yeah.
When comes the actual game?
Right.
Other than the character creation. I forgot how bad I am at shooters, and it's been a long time. I was watching you play Bioshock.
Fuck you.
I was watching you play Bioshock. I'm like, man, this is pretty crazy. John can't hit anything. And then I'm playing.
What are you talking about? I died a time.
Yeah, but you burned like all your ammo on 2 dudes. I mean, and then I proceeded to do the same thing in Cyberpunk. I burned 3 clips trying to kill 3 dudes. I'm like, this is absurd, Wes.
Should you just run? Like, was that the strategy?
It got to the point where, like, I just need to run up and melee them. I can't hit them with the fucking gun. I don't, like, I can't do this shit.
So that's your primary gameplay, is going down and do some shooty shoots?
There is some stealth mechanics to it. They've added that in, which I'm planning on doing, going heavy into stealth. I always do that whenever there's an option.
Stealth with a bow, you know?
Whenever I can, man, because apparently I can't shoot anything in a fast running gun scenario, so I need to take my time and pick them off. Because I can't aim with shit. It's good, though. It looks... I'm excited to see what the game does. I'm excited to see where the floppy penises come into play. But
yeah, those are going to be key mechanics.
Key mechanics.
Right there.
But all right. It's going to be good. Glitches and all.
So I got a couple more that I want to...
I'll let you borrow it when I'm done.
Okay. Banner of the Maid, I picked up on a whim. I mentioned that on a different show. It was like on sale, and I felt like starting a new game. So I for some reason, bought a tactical RPG like a week before Fire Emblem came out. So this one is... I don't think I got into any specifics last time I spoke about it. It is a tactical RPG set in a sort of like fictitious French Revolution period. So instead of like being purely medieval, there are... characters that carry rifles and horseback units, like cavalier type units. It was all like 18th and 19th century type stuff. There are 4 character classes, and you get several characters. Well, 4 main character classes, and you get several characters in each. It's a relatively small roster, and I've pretty much been taking every character on every mission with me, which I think is good for a smaller game like this. I should also say, I think it's based on a mobile game, so it's a little bit janky.
Wait, was it a mobile game that they brought over? Or
I think so.
It was based on a mobile game.
I think it...
Which seems absurd.
I don't think it is... It might just be a straight port. I don't know if it's a straight port. It might be modified in some way. But I'm pretty sure it was in some form a mobile game before it came to Switch.
Because that seems like an insane concept. They're this mobile game where it's not very impressive?
Let's do some fan fiction of this mobile game. But it's because it's a little bit janky.
in the way that you're interfacing. Sometimes, like, you think you're hovering over a certain unit, or you think you've sent a unit to face a certain direction, but it hasn't quite taken your input yet, so you have to press the button a couple of times. It's a little rough around the edges as far as the tech specs are concerned. It's also very talky. And thankfully, all of these are skippable, which I have been doing.
Because, you know, that would be game-breaking for you.
Yeah.
That'd be a deal-breaker.
That would be like... Then there are like also like these vague, kind of semi-dating sim. Like, it's not like a dating sim, like you're trying to romance any other characters. It's more like there are different factions throughout this French Revolution version of Paris. And they each, like, run their own shop. And by interacting with them and telling them the things they want to hear, you access more things from that shop. You just build up your relationship with them and can buy more things from them. So it's kind of how like you're unlocking your skill upgrades or like new, better weapons. Because there's a weapon system similar to Fire Emblem where, you know, you have like your basic stuff and then, you know, your basic rifles and then like the step above that and the step above that until eventually you get to your silver rifle or, you know, whatever it is that there's going to be at the end. And like your skills also work similar to Fire Emblem in that you can have like you learn more as you level up your characters and you can pay to unlock more. And like you have like a certain number of skill slots where you can equip your different skills to. But the most basic gameplay is in like the revolves around the four character type classes. There are like just your basic infantry units, a heavier class infantry unit, a light cavalry, and a heavy cavalry. And each of them, like everything is weak to one thing and then is effective on another thing. And it just goes in a circle. And the biggest strategy in any given map is making sure that you are lining up your units to where you're drawing the enemy in or you're able to attack the enemy based on this sort of wheel of effectiveness. You want like your certain type of rifleman going against heavy cavalry, but definitely not that other type of cavalry because they will kill you. And it really makes a big difference, like even bigger difference than the weapon triangle in Fire Emblem games. Like it really, really matters which units you're pitting against other ones in Banner of the Maid. Some of the missions do get a little tricky because there are time limits and you have to be really specific about the way that you're playing through the mission in order to prevent an enemy character from escaping, something like that, or finishing with a certain amount of turns. There are also like bonus objectives, like, hey, here's a map and you have to beat this one in 8 turns if you want the bonus for it. And I may have gotten the bonus once or twice. It seems like the bonuses are something that you're going specifically in a New Game Plus, because there is eventually a New Game Plus option once you beat the game. I haven't finished it yet. I think I'm about like 50%, and then I put a pin in it until I finish off Fire Emblem, and I'll probably end up going back to it. It's an okay little game. I think it's enough to where like I play through a mission a day, and then I've had enough of it, because the missions can be lengthier. Like, in any given Fire Emblem game, you might spend, like, 20 minutes to a half hour in a longer mission, whereas these, like, you know, 45 minutes in a mission, because you have so many units to contend with, and they really do populate with a lot of enemies, which is pretty cool. So, you know, you got those four units, then there's also, like, an artillery unit. I only have one of them so far, but exactly what it sounds like, she's attacking at a much larger range than other units. There are also, like, minstrels, to, like, put it in Fire Emblem terms. They're, you know, a unit, like, he'll play the drums for you, and you get to move again. Or that's also how you're, like, you're doing your mage. You're healing. There's a kid with drums, and he'll play a song, and you'll recover from your bullet wounds, because that's how that works.
That's how, you know, science.
Yeah. But there's not a lot of them. Like, I only have one unit right now that can do any sort of healing. There are consumable items, like bread, and since it's France, croissants, which they call special bread. Seems vaguely insensitive, but fine. It's just the French. Fuck them.
All right.
But the
beautiful city though in Paris.
Yeah,
I thoroughly enjoyed Paris.
You get two uses even out of your croissants. You're not saving any for later. You're just eating it and you eat like half of it and the other half later. And it's really not restoring all that much HP, you know. So, and another thing about like planning your moves correctly is like in addition to doing extra damage to something you are strong against, because they are weak against you, they are less likely to hit you. So it becomes more about preserving your HP rather than, you know, trying to heal up as often as you can. And there's no permanent death, which I think also helps. There are like battle conditions, like, hey, if three people have to retreat, you're going to lose this fight. So don't be sloppy. So I think it's a good way to find a nice balance between, you know, having not having permanent death, but then not also just like letting you go through and win with your very last unit. There is a way to save in the middle of a fight, which is fine. But I've gotten to a point where like I'm at the end of a battle. I got like three or four units left to kill. Somebody dies, you know, dies in quotes. And I'm like, okay, well, they just left, so I'm just going to finish this off. It doesn't matter if they die or not. There's no like repercussions in the next fight. Like it's not like XCOM where they're like, you know, shaken because they've become shell-shocked. There's nothing like that. You can just kind of move on with your life. But yeah. Generally pretty positive. It's an okay little game.
Okay.
We both are playing Superliminal, which is a game that Ryan brought over, and he'll probably want to talk about it the next time he's here, too.
Yeah,
we were
playing it a bit. Yeah, I forgot about that game.
Ryan is really impressed with it.
It's really trippy.
I think it's fine.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's fine.
I think he's like most impressed with the tech, because it's like the thing with this game is like its hook is that you are changing the size of objects based on perspective. So if you pick something up and you're standing really close to it and it's a small object, you're standing really close to it so it looks larger, you pick it up and then you move it, it actually becomes larger and occupies more space than it did before. And a lot of the puzzles that you're solving throughout the game are based upon just adjusting your perspective on things in order to, you know, build yourself a ramp or a ladder or a staircase to access the next thing. There are a couple of head scratchers in there. There's one, I'll just say it's got an apple in it and a fan, and the immediate solution isn't presented. It's tough to figure out what they want you to do. I think there are a couple of puzzles in the game where they don't exactly intuitively lead you up to like the sort of difficulty that you're going to be presented with. Not so much like presenting you with an obvious solution immediately, but like informing you, like, here is something that you could do, it might be important later. You know, sometimes the tech of the game just gets a little bit wonky as well. Like, there were times where I was just trying to build a ramp out of some cheese, man, like you do.
Yep.
And the game wasn't cooperating with like what I was trying to get it to do. And I felt like the game was fighting it. Like, I know what I'm supposed to do here. I know that this is the way to do it. Why aren't you working with me, cheese? Get it together. But yeah, he was saying it was also a short game. So, you know, that's a merciful lesson.
Yes, I think so. The game's fun. It's interesting. It's just a good little time killer.
Mm.
It's nothing it's you're going to put heavy work into. It's just an interesting little thing. It's not a game that you would go back to, because you generally remember the solutions anyways, and like, oh, all right, and like the cheese is a ramp again. All right,
you know, it makes me think of a game, like, it's got a neat idea and it's got like a neat piece of like a technical mechanic in it, but they weren't quite sure exactly how to use it. Like, it seems like this game is missing something else, some sort of, I don't know if it's like atmospheric, if it like it needs another element to it. I don't think it needs anything like combat, but I think it or like heavier platforming elements or something like that. But something else that gives it a bit more depth to the gameplay, because a lot of times, like, you know, there are these clear like screen doors, and when you walk through those, you can't take anything with you. So it's a way of like to reset, so you're only working with the things that they want you to work with. But yeah. Anyway, I think it's an interesting idea, but
I'll put a pin in there until Ryan wants to talk about it, because he is much more enamored with it than we are. And the last thing I got on my list of games is The Shady Part of Me, which is a game we just started.
Yeah, we just started. Yeah. You haven't started it before?
Nope.
This is the very first time firing it up.
No, that game is a new release. It came out on Switch a few days ago, and I was at work, and Dez was at work as well, and a trailer popped up for it. So we were both watching the trailer, and she thought it looked kind of cool. So like, okay. So I downloaded it. And when we just started it, and she seems really taken with it. She seems to like the atmosphere and like the narration and like the way they're like presenting a narrative, which is kind of cool.
I find it creepy as fuck.
There's definitely like something that's just a little bit off kilter. Like it's
like The Ring meets Willy Wonka meets Inside meets Lit meets.
There's a lot of crossing. There's like a perfect Venn diagram of those four things with one thing in it, and that's this game.
And it's also creepy in the sense of how innocent it is. Mm. Like, at a certain point, innocence to a certain degree mixed with certain things can just be really creepy. Mm.
So, it is like a puzzle game. Like,
it's not their intention. You're not going to be creeped out by this game. I just find it creepy because it makes me think of The Ring, and I fucking hate The Ring.
Well, you know, there are some elements to it. Like, you'll like look through a window and see something like swinging on a swing. You're not sure if that's alive or it's one of like these little mannequin dolls that she's placed all over the place. Like, there is an element of because it's kind of like this abandoned orphanage, it looks like, that she's moving through. So there is an element of something unsettling. Like, something happened there. Like, why is she alone here? Why is there no one else? You know? So, I don't think, like, they're going to go for a jump scare.
They may go something a little unnerving with it. But overall, so far, it's playful.
Yeah, and I think, like, your comparison to Inside is appropriate because it is a game where, you know, the primary mechanic is going to be like, okay, figure out how to get through to the end of this room. And, you know, it's so far most of the puzzles have been like, find the lever. And you compared it to the game Lit, which is a deep cut. Because yes. That was a WiiWare game, which I think eventually ended up coming out on mobile platforms as well.
It's a fantastic game. If it's on mobile platforms and you guys get a chance to play it, go grab it. It is a great game.
That's a game from way forward where you are in a dark room, and the only way you need to get to your exit, and the only way to get to your exit is to create a path of light for yourself by doing things like turning on TVs or lamps or
breaking windows.
Because one of the main mechanics is you have a slingshot and you can use it to activate things at range and create a path for yourself. And The Shady Part of Me, it's kind of the inverse of that in one part of the game. You're playing the game in two parts, one as the girl from The Ring and the other as her shadow. And the girl from The Ring can't step into anything that's too heavily illuminated by, you know, lamps or sunlight or anything like that. And the shadow is blocked by other shadows, so she has to stay within the light. And, you know, your objective is to get them to, like, the end point of the room, the both of them. And a lot of the puzzles revolve around, you know, just timing your dashes when you're going to go through a light, or if there's like a moving platform of shade, to time your jumps there. And then like pull some levers, manipulate some objects in order to create either more light or more shade, depending on which character half you're trying to manipulate around. Yeah.
It looks really nice, especially when it comes to the shade part of it. They did that really well, I think. The beginning of it, you're just kind of the shadow girl on a swing, and you're going through this little area. And then as you get through the area, it expands, and you realize there's a shadow on a wall in a building. And like at one point, you're jumping off this ledge, and you essentially fall off the wall onto the floor, and now you're moving it through the floor, and so your perspective kind of slightly alters as you're going along. And so there's a lot of shadow manipulation in order to create platforms for things to move around, and it's just really nicely done with the way it is, because it's just literally a shadow on the wall while you're moving within a regular room. But the shadows' size and things like that alter, and their positioning and the angles of their eye based on going around corners and things like that. Mm-hmm. It's very well done, and it looks really nice. And they have a creepy story that shows up here and there. Wherever you go, they just kind of show up behind you like, where's my friend? And things like that. Yeah, it's a very cute, innocent game that has the potential of being really freaking creepy.
Yeah. yeah. I think like the color palette also contributes to that sort of like unsettling tone, because it's there's not a lot of color in it. It's very like monochromatic.
It's not like sepia, but it's like a very like low grade grayish sepia.
Yeah.
Like it's that antique-y kind of look almost.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah, it's unnerving.
Yeah, it's we're like. Or we're not super far into the game. No, we maybe went for like a half 10 hour.
10 minutes of that. Like, yeah, not far at all.
But I think so far, like, it's showing a lot of promise. There are a number of these games, like Inside and Limbo and Little Nightmares. And those are like the cream of the crop. There was one that I played earlier this year called Stella. It is super easy to just kind of fuck these things up. Like, Stella was not particularly good. It's like, you look at these games, like, it's a simple premise. They're very simple mechanics. But it's not always easy to carry that through to, like a full experience. Sometimes, like, a lot of times it just kind of gets old by the end, and you're not able to come up with anything new to do with these simple mechanics. And I think because they have, like, the two halves of it and a lot of, like, light manipulation, I think it's got some potential. And it's not supposed to be a super long game. I was looking at it. It's only like 3 hours long.
Oh, so, okay.
Yeah.
I can't see them going longer than that.
Right.
I mean,
and I think like it would be, to a certain extent, impressive if they overstayed their welcome at 3 hours.
Yeah.
You know, like, how did you get to be mundane in only 3 hours? That's almost impressive. But yeah, sure, a short game, so it shouldn't take more than a couple of days to get through. And yeah, I think it's shaping up to be pretty good. What else you got?
We both watched a movie.
We did.
We have. Separate. We did not watch this together.
Right.
In our PJs with popcorn, curled up on the couch under a single blanket. we did not do this.
Nope.
But we did watch this movie, and I think we have the same...
I watched it twice.
You watched it twice.
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
I saw it in theaters, and then I saw it when it came out on Blu-ray.
They had it in theaters?
Yeah.
Those are still a thing.
So this movie is New Mutants. And yeah, a movie theater, children, is a place that we used to be able to go, where, you know, you sat in these seats and you watched a movie on a very large screen.
Yeah, and your hand bumped to strangers on the armrest that you share accidentally, and then it gets awkward.
A lot of theaters...
Yeah, well, a lot of theaters. Some guy sits in front of you with a big ass fro and you can't see anything.
I was about to say a lot of theaters are doing this. I should put this in the past tense. A lot of theaters had been moving into a direction of having like more individualized chairs rather than like these row seatings. So, yeah. You know, like a recliner with a couple of cup holders on each side. So you weren't like sharing an armrest with anyone else. It was just everyone has their own individual chairs. Or at least they did. You know, back when theaters were a thing.
Yes.
Yeah. It's not going to be too much longer. They're not going to do this anymore.
Which is a shame. I enjoy theaters.
Me too. But me and Hector went and saw it the week it came out.
Son of a bitch.
Back in August.
You and Hector.
We went after work.
Come on, man.
We went after work.
I'm being replaced by this fucker.
And
I know you're listening, Hector.
I think I told the story. We went and saw it, and aside from the employees, there was no one else in the multiplex. Like, we walked in, it was like tumbleweed. There was not only no one else in like the actual theater where they were showing this movie. Like, there was no one.
Were the employees surprised
else
to see you? Like, what are you doing here? Like, it's...
Well, we were there, and you know, we were gonna buy concessions anyway. But like at that point, we're like, we should buy extra concessions. Like, even if we're not gonna like eat them, we should.
This compared to the guy who keeps the two people employed at Netflix.
I right. Mean,
you're just,
right.
You feel bad for these people.
And you know, it's funny because so few movies are coming out. I was looking at my Netflix subscription. I was like, do I want to just take it down to one Blu-ray at a time? Do I want to...
Oh, dude. Scott Fredrickson's going to lose a job.
Maybe they'll have to fire him. I did not do it because I found another use for it. We do a retro show. We're going to do one next week. And in these retro shows, we often talk about films that came out.
So you're going to watch these old films that came out?
So rather than trying to find them streaming somewhere, I'm going to just say, hey, mail me these 21-year-old movies, please.
Oh, my God.
Netflix is going up in price.
I noticed. Yeah, they're what, another buck or something?
Yeah, it's up to 13. I remember it was $7.99.
It was $7.99 for the streaming, right?
Yeah, I had to cancel my Hulu.
I canceled Hulu, too.
Well, I was looking to cancel it anyways, and then I took a look at it, and it goes, why is my bill $75?
Whoa.
Somebody hacked into my account and added ESPN.
My goodness. Okay. Yeah,
they really fucked it. And I was like, listen, one, I need my money back for this, which they did. And two, just go ahead and just cancel it.
We're done here.
So that was the thing. New Mutants is a thing.
Well, hang on. One second.
There's another tangent.
I also canceled Hulu. Like, but you have Disney Plus though, right? Or do you like watch what you
I
want
need to
watch
find somebody to steal?
Gotcha.
Because I did for season one of Mandalorian.
Right.
And I don't want to get it again just for season two of Mandalorian.
Understandable. So I also canceled Hulu because I just wasn't using it anymore. Ripley would use it for Sesame Street, but Sesame Street's also on HBO Max, so I just pulled the swap. And they have more on HBO Max.
HBO Max has Studio Ghibli.
It's true. Yeah, and Mika watched a couple of those. She was watching Secret World of Arrietty, and she started watching Princess Mononoke, but hasn't finished it yet.
Are you okay with her watching that? That's awfully gory.
Eh.
Eh.
I mean, I've never seen it.
It's awfully gory.
Okay, I'll have to watch it first, just to make sure.
It's awfully gory.
She really hasn't seen that much violence. So yeah, I should probably check it out.
She probably would like Spirited Away.
But yeah, she probably would.
House Moving Castle and Kiki's. Ugh.
Years ago, months ago at this point, I was watching...
Feels like years.
Yeah, it does. I was rewatching Stranger Things before season 3 came out, just to kind of refresh on where I was. And she came in and she watched the scene where Bob dies.
Oh.
Fucking spoilers. And she saw it and
the
she was like...
The guy that works for Radio Shack, come on. That actually hurt when Bob died. May it rest in peace. I was legit upset about that. I was like, no, not Bob!
No, she didn't come in exactly that point. She saw a little bit of Bob before Bob dies. And she was like, what happened to Bob? And I like had to go through like, well, that his name is Sean Astin. He's pretending to be Bob. And I like had to pull up the IMDb page for Sean Astin. Like, this is him. He's fine. He's okay. He's just pretending to be killed by the monster because he's doing this thing called acting.
Oh, my God. So I'd
explain acting to her.
And then then she goes, what do you mean dying? What is dying? What is like, death? Oh, shit.
I mean, I think like as a species, we eventually, like early on, we recognize the concept of death. I don't know if we fully recognize the finality of it until later on, but she knows what death is.
Yeah, this is getting into death. This is
video games, though.
Video games are a thing. Yeah,
we die a lot in video games.
We do. So those have a restart button.
New Mutants. I saw it in theaters. I also saw it on Blu-ray. You saw it as well.
We don't go see movies.
Not in theaters.
We don't watch movies together.
We can watch Wonder Woman together. It's going to be on HBO Max.
Okay, we can watch Wonder Woman.
Okay. I really have no interest in Wonder Woman.
Not either. We'll find something better.
Yeah. So we'll rewatch Doctor Who.
But New Mutants.
Yes.
I think our takeaway of it is pretty much the same. It was okay.
Yeah, it was okay.
They made a movie.
Yeah, they sure did.
It's not bad.
I thought that it was going to be like scarier than it was.
It wasn't at all.
No, they like had a few moments that like oh, there's demons coming, or like the dudes with no faces and stuff.
Yeah.
Which you know were I think intended to be a little bit frightening, but like overall, like it didn't have like the tension that you need in a horror movie.
The early previews for it did look like a horror movie. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is going to be legitimately creepy.
Yeah.
Which I don't do well with horror movies, so I was kind of bummed out. So I was like, oh, I don't know, depending on how creepy this is going to be, mm-hmm. I may have to like skip this thing. This one wasn't scary at all. There nothing about this scared me.
Yeah, I don't think
I was worried at anything. There was no jump scare. It was whatever.
Yeah, I don't think you ever really got to feel like the tension. Like, you never really thought that anyone was in any real danger.
I like the twist that wasn't a twist at all, because we all saw...
we all know what Danny Moonstar's powers are.
I didn't know who it was. I didn't know who she was. I didn't know her powers. But 2 minutes in the movie, I go, okay, she's making fears.
Yeah, that's
her powers. I mean, it's just like, come on.
That's her powers. She can manifest your biggest fears. And you know, in the comics, she eventually gets to the point where she manifests them as something more realistic. But in when she was originally conceived... it was just an illusion. It wasn't actually something that is going to like cause you physical harm.
Mm-hmm.
It's just you become so paralyzed with your fear that she's able to walk away.
Thrilling character.
Yeah. I mean, by the way, she actually is a cool character in the comics. And I thought they did a pretty good job with all the characters. I think that was the strongest point of the movie, is like all of the characterization. Because I think they nailed all the characters down pretty well.
Is Cannonball really that bland and boring?
Cannonball, yeah, is a big old goober. Like, he's not a particularly interesting guy at all, so they nailed it. But I think, like, the actor did a good job with, like, his mannerisms and stuff. Like, he's, especially when he's introduced in the comics, he's kind of, like, frustrated by his, like, own ineffectiveness. Like, he can't control his powers, and he also, like, carries around some guilt. I don't remember if he actually accidentally killed his... No, he didn't kill his dad. I don't think he didn't accidentally kill anybody in the actual comics. So that was an extra layer to give that character something to do. But none of the characters really had a whole lot of anything to do. They were all just kind of hanging out, having fun.
The whole movie was just them hanging out, learning nothing about them.
Well, you know, I think you get a bit from Sunspot. With how he accidentally also kills someone. Like, a lot of people kill people in this movie.
Pretty much that's how they got there.
They're all a bunch of murderers.
The Wolfsbane, did she kill the priest? That's not why she's there?
I don't know. I can't remember if she killed him or not. But she's there because, you know, she's a mutant.
And Amelia is there because she just murdered a whole bunch of people.
I really like the characterization that they give Ileana, because...
Like, is she really that much of a bitch in the comics?
No, she was never like a mean girl,
like
a high school mean girl. But there were times where she's very blunt, and doesn't have any sort of respect for authority. But she's not mean to the other new mutants. Her and Danny are actually kind of best buddies, aside from like Danny and Rain are like the best buddies in the comic, and then like Ileana's just like a tier below that. Ileana and Shadowcat are best buddies in the comics.
Yeah, like, because Lockheed shows up.
Yeah, Lockheed is in there.
Makes an appearance.
Which was fun.
Yeah, he's a puppet, and then just randomly he's there, and then he goes away, and they don't explain that at all for the movie aspect. It's just...
I didn't either.
Here's a dragon, and now he's gone. Like,
I thought that was one of the most fun parts about it, is, like, you just thought, like, she's just crazy. She's got a puppet that she talks to and gets really mad if someone else takes him. And then... at a certain point, he just becomes a real dragon. I thought that was really fun.
They don't even dress it, and he's gone. He's back to being a puppet. Like, it's...
There are a lot of things.
Well, fuck.
There are a lot of things about her character that they don't address, which, you know, it's an hour and a half movie. They don't have time for it.
Her character alone is worth two movies, mm-hmm. and the complexity of what's going on with her.
Because there is a lot going on with her. Like, she has her soul armor and her soul sword. That you do get glimpses of her teleporting into Limbo.
Which, that was her power, right?
She's a teleporter.
She teleports through Limbo to get to places.
Right, but it's not like... like, Nightcrawler also teleports through another dimension, but his is instantaneous and he doesn't stop. Whereas Ileana teleports into Limbo and then can teleport out of Limbo.
So it actually takes her some traveling and stuff.
Right, and... It's not like a part of her power that's addressed very often anymore, but early on when that character was introduced and got her teleportation powers, the further that she teleports, like distance-wise, she also travels through time. So she got herself into a couple of situations where, you know, she was trying to teleport very far, but ended up in a at the completely wrong time, like either, you know, months earlier, months late, because... she was just trying to go too far. And she eventually, like, learns to get that under control because Limbo is... We've referenced Doctor Who several times. Limbo is like a Doctor Who episode where it's just like a big ball of timey-wimey.
Nonsense, yeah. Yeah,
it doesn't work the same way in Limbo that it does linearly on Earth. So you can go into Limbo and teleport out, and teleport out at an earlier time that you went in. Mm. But only Ileana, because she's the only one who can teleport into there.
They took some liberties with it. They imply that she created Limbo in the movie.
Right.
Which is wrong.
No, Limbo's a place.
Yeah.
Limbo's a place.
Which added weirdness to that character. So, like, what child would make Limbo like that? Like, is that how Limbo's typically portrayed? Like, hell on... Just hell?
Yeah. Limbo is hell. Well, it's not like hell... Like the
it's not the biblical.
It's not the biblical hell, because that also exists in the Marvel universe. Limbo and hell are separate places, but yeah, it's like a demonscape. It doesn't have to be, though. Like, there are parts of Limbo, and there's a miniseries in the early 80s called Magic, and you kind of like you get to learn Ileana's origins and how she becomes older. She gets advanced in age by 7 years because she was in Limbo. And you get to see how she develops her powers, and she's also a sorceress. She uses magic, which they also reference in the movie, but they don't really... It's not part of her mutation. Like, she doesn't cast spells because she's a mutant.
No, she just learns that.
Yeah, she does that.
She becomes a sorceress supreme, just like Doctor Strange.
Yep. And... So in that limited series where you get introduced to all these things with her, there's also a version of Storm that is in Limbo that is able to turn it into something that's like not a hellscape. She's able to like make her own garden in Limbo. And it's an older version of Storm, because before Ileana went into Limbo, other X-Men, Storm, Colossus, Wolverine, Nightcrawler, were accidentally transported to Limbo, and they escape. But because Limbo's a fucked up place, they escape, but different versions of them continue to inhabit Limbo.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
So, and you like you get to see like Nightcrawler go evil, and Storm becomes a sorceress in there as well, and Shadowcat's in there, but you know she gets like turned into like a more of like a human cat creature by the god, I think it was Mephisto who was ruling Limbo at the time.
Huh.
Yeah. Anyway.
So briefly more on her, and then I have questions about the other characters.
Okay.
Lockheed is more of a shadow cat thing.
Right.
But there is certain they do interact in the comics a little bit, Magic and Lockheed.
Yes. Yeah, but mostly, like, 99% of the time he's hanging out with. When you see Lockheed, he's hanging out with.
Yeah, so it's weird that they added Kitty. That with her character like that. I guess they just wanted to throw him in.
I guess.
This is weird to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was having a hard time with that. I was like, why is fucking Lockheed there? All right.
Because Lockheed is cool.
Yeah, he is a cool little dude. So, the one kid that does all the dishes.
Sunspot, yeah.
Sunspot.
Roberto.
Roberto.
Uh-huh.
He's pretty much just the Human Torch.
No.
Oh, all right.
So that's an aspect of his power that happens later on. When he's originally introduced, he gets his like his sunspot form, which, you know, he doesn't turn on fire, he just like turns completely black and gets super strength.
Oh.
Yeah.
Does he throw fire or burn stuff or
In the 90s, he starts to throw fire.
Oh. But overall, it's just...
Right.
I get strong and...
Yeah, and I don't think that's an aspect of his power that's used a whole lot anymore. And actually, the most recent times that you've seen Sunspot in comics, he's not really using his powers all that much.
Hmm.
Which he shouldn't. He's a goober.
Yeah, it's odd. We got Wolfsbane in there.
Uh-huh.
That was an interesting portrayal of her.
Yep, and that was, you know, pretty spot on, you know, religious.
I don't like they pretty much just made her a dog.
but she, yeah, she can
be. She does that in the comics? She just turns straight into a dog?
Yeah, she can,
And when she was first introduced, she has, you know, her human form and her wolf form. And then as she, like, learns to use her powers, she kind of gets, like, the in-between stuff. And one of the more interesting parts of her character is during the events of Extinction Agenda, there's, you know, the island nation Genosha. And this nation takes mutant citizens and basically, like, makes them slaves.
Yeah.
And they get Wolvesbane. They put her through the process of making her, like, they call them mutates, but they're mutants that they've conditioned and controlled and altered. And they become, like zombies. And they get Wolvesbane. They put her through the process. And the only way that she can, after the events of Extinction Agenda, the only way she can not be just, like, the droned out zombie is by staying in her half wolf form, so she can't go back to being human.
Oh.
And then, you know, they also did some other, like, fucked up shit where, like, they kind of, like, imprinted her, as you would a baby bird, onto Havoc.
Oh.
So she is, like, creepily obsessed with him, and she has no idea why. She eventually finds out and is pretty pissed about it, but she doesn't stop being creepily obsessed with him. There was, like, one particular moment in X-Factor, you know, where he's leading the X-Factor team and she's on the team as well. And he, like, wakes up and she's, like, just sitting by his bed in her half-wolf form, just, like, perched up, staring at him. And he's like, this has to stop. You gotta cut this out.
It's the third time this week. You gotta stop it.
Yeah, it's really enough. But, yeah.
The doctor?
Cecilia Reyes. Yeah, not a villain. Not a villain in the comics.
Make her a villain here.
Yeah, she's very much a villain. Also expanded her powers quite a bit.
Really?
Yeah, she really only has, like, a personal force field to protect herself. And in this one, like, she has the dome, and that's why they can't escape. Why can't Illyana teleport out of there? You ask? We don't talk about that.
We don't bring that up. We won't address this.
But yeah, she's the one, like, kind of keeping them hostage and, like, saying that, you know, they'll get better and then they get to move on to, she always refers to him as her employer. And, like, they're like, the children, the teens, the new mutants in the facility are kind of like, oh, yeah, we're going to become X-Men. She must be talking about Xavier. And, like, you know, like, no, clearly she is not. Otherwise, she would just say, the professor or Xavier, not my employer. Clearly she's talking about someone else. And who else likes fucking with mutants and orphanages? Sinister. That's who likes doing that.
Oh, is that what the company is? Mm-hmm. That's Sinister's company?
Yeah, Essex Corporation, yeah.
Oh.
Sinister's original name is Nathaniel Essex.
Oh. See, I was wondering what this Essex company was.
Yeah. It's, so. Yep. And so when Cecilia Reyes is introduced in the comics in the mid, maybe late 90s, she's in Operation Zero Tolerance. She can't control her powers. Like, she can't put up the force field whenever she feels like. And it is more of, like, a defense mechanism. It just automatically happens. But, like, if someone goes to stab her and, you know, of course they hit the force field, so she's physically unharmed, she still, like, feels the pain. So her brain is still registering, like, hey, you've been stabbed.
Oh, God. Yeah. All right.
And it's because she never, like, went to the Xavier school. Like, it gets revealed that she, like, Xavier did offer, like, hey, you should come to the school, but she didn't want to. But because she never developed her powers, like, she doesn't really use them effectively. It's just, yeah, this thing just kind of happens when someone tries to stab me. I get a force field.
Wow, yeah, that's a big twist on that character. Let's take this obscure character and just make her a villain and expand her powers to this extreme.
Mm-hmm. And again, her powers, as far as I know, never really develop in the comics. So, you know, it's a pretty big expansion on what she does. Because, you know, she hangs out with the X-Men for a little while, but she's not a character that, like, goes on missions. She's, like, she is a doctor. She's a surgeon. So, you know, she is hanging out, like, the medical facilities for a little while. But eventually just kind of goes away.
Her character may be kept on. I kept thinking about a character from a book series that I've read. Whose name is Prof, and It's that I talked about years ago on the show. It's the one where like the world's taken over by people with powers, but they're evil, and this group of resistance fights them, or whatever. Well, this prof guy's got power of he can put up force fields, but he also can control the force field's size. And at one point, he puts a force field on a person, and it condenses it smaller than a basketball.
Gross.
And so I'm like, oh fuck! Like this. Squish. This entire time I'm watching this movie, I'm like, at some point she's just gotta kill somebody. Just.
And she does. She puts them in the bubbles.
Yeah, she puts them in the bubbles, and she does condense them down a bit. I'm like, oh, this is it. They're all fucking dead. Like this is where they get squished to nothing.
I thought they handled all the characters well. I thought Cecilia Reyes, she's not like an important character in the slightest. Like a maker villain, who cares? I think they nailed all the personalities pretty well, and the powers, you know, were close enough to make it fun. My biggest gripe is whenever you have like the big action sequences, they show you something else instead of the actual fight.
Yeah.
We're gonna go fight the bear now, and like Ileana's gonna be out there fighting the bear, and here comes Cannonball, he's gonna go out there and fight the bear too. Let's show Rain Dragon Danny's corpse around. So clearly they ran out of money.
Yeah. That's really. I was really looking for that big fight scene. Pull out the sword. Let's do this shit.
Yeah, and you get really small glimpses of it, but
and pretty cool glimpses.
Yeah,
and then Sunspot shows up just to get squashed.
Yeah,
and then like thanks for your contribution.
That's essentially how ineffectual he is. Yes,
he gives a participation award.
Yep, like, thanks for showing up. Yeah. That's really the only major gripe I had in the movie, is that when you really want to see the cool stuff, they don't show you the cool stuff. They show you the other stuff. Yeah, overall, I thought it was kind of fun.
It was all right.
Yeah.
It was not bad.
We've been going for 1:45, so we better just close it out there.
Yeah, me shows tend to go long.
Yeah.
Up next is the retro.
Yeah, retro show. And there's really not a game, so we'll send out the text and we'll circle the wagons and see what we want to do there. The only game... I shouldn't phrase it that way. There are a couple of games that came out that are worth discussing. I haven't played any of them, and I kind of want to push them off so that I have time to do it on another month, kind of put them in the bank for early next year, because there's not a whole lot of games early next year either. But the one that we could at least bring up is Castlevania Legacy of Darkness, which is an enhanced version of Castlevania 64, which we talked about, I think it was last December. Kind of funny that Konami put out a new version of their own game. But there it is. I mean, otherwise, you know, we can probably talk about some movies or some other retro stuff, maybe go through how we feel about the N64 library in general up to this point. But we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
And then we'll wrap it up at the end of the month with the official show, in which we'll talk about 2020 as a whole.
For video games.
Yeah. 2020 video games. We're not going to... Yeah. We don't have time to do everything else. Just games.
We don't have time to address this COVID shit.
Yeah. But it'll be good, because there's a lot of games that are worth looking back on and assessing the year as a whole. But that's it. That's the end. Till next time.
So long.